Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 157. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
I'm down in my secret lair here in Lakeville.
Graham Thickens.
Hello there.
Phil Wilson.
Tim, you have a lair? I just have an office.
Yeah, no, that sounded very James Bondian in the beginning. That music.
It was. It was. Okay. It's called 007.
I got you.
And then last but not least, Julio Sherlock Ojeda Zapata.
Hello. Sherlock. Is he watching the second series already?
I don't know. Are you, Julio? Oh,
I'm not a big Sherlock Holmes fan. I tried watching the new modern Sherlock.
Yeah.
Series. Didn't really agree with me.
Really? I thought it was brilliant. I'm waiting for the second series, but I have to get through Downton Abbey first.
You know, they're making an American one.
I saw that, so CBS is doing that, and I just, you know, it's like, come on, guys, get original. Plus,
they're doing New York. Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah, and they're going to set him in New York. Sherlock's going to be in New York.
Oh, that's right. I read your Google Plus post on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, come on. You know, I actually like the new one, and we're huge. Our entire family, my kids and my wife and I, are real huge Sherlock Holmes fans, and we've read the books, and we've watched, you know, Basil Rathbone, and we watched Jeremy Brett as Sherlock, and we were really skeptical about the new one. But I remember, you know, even being a kid reading Sherlock Holmes and thinking, geez, what if he had, you know, fill in the blank modern technology? And so now this new one, you can see what would it be like if Sherlock Holmes had DNA and GPS and all sorts of things.
I think they should just go ahead and bring back Wild Wild West. That's an American version of a show. So then you got gadgets.
Right.
Then you
You're
got
right.
gadgets.
You're right.
You could set it in Arizona. You know, there'd be a bunch of retired guys. You know,
I'm sure they'll bring it back. You know, everything is retread. There's very little original stuff these days. Everything is, you know, a sequel of this or that, or they bring it back from the dead. You know.
So yeah. I wanted to inform everybody. You probably could be what would be the best part of the podcast. I'm going to try and convince Steve to go ahead and include it. We were chatting before we started the music and started recording, but that's right. You didn't record that, did you, Steve?
I did not. I apologize. That
was good stuff. It was good stuff.
So it's anyway, off the record.
It was kind of off the record stuff. But I wanted to let you know there were a couple of very key moments in our discussion, and just to let you guys know, Graham Thickens actually said a bad thing about Apple.
Oh, I did.
One thing.
I don't think that's a bad thing.
He mentioned he was going to probably switch to Windows 8.
I did. Heresy, my man. Heresy.
No, actually, and then Tim let slip that he actually upgraded to Lion.
I did.
For iBooks Author,
right? Did anybody catch that?
Yeah, but you did it for iBooks Author.
Yeah, I did. Seven months after it was released.
Yeah, I think probably in the last 7 months, we've heard maybe 20 times that I just haven't updated to.
Yeah, no, and Graham, I wouldn't update, actually. I mean, there's a couple of things are nice. I mean, I kind of like this launch pad thing. I don't like what they've done with, what do they call it, Mission Control. I really preferred Spaces to this. I
never use it, so.
Everything else is about the same, but I just got the iMessages yesterday. So I think that's only Lion, it's going to be a major, a Mountain Lion feature too.
Let's talk about that in a minute. Cause Julio, you have looked at this pretty extensively, but before we get cranked up on that, let's just recap, what happened with all these privacy issues. Now, obviously, the whole thing with Apple and the address book and PATH happened, and then Congress sent Apple a letter, and they then came out and said that they're going to require permission for iOS apps to access address book data. But then Steve Alexander had something in the paper this morning, which I'd known about but hadn't actually seen anything on, which was the U of M researchers who found a flaw in AT&T and T-Mobile cell towers that reveals the location of phone users if you have their number.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean,
You read that? Did you read that article? It took him quite a long time to find it.
No, I know. It
took him like, what was it, like 8 months or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. The revelation came during 8 months of research last year.
No, I know. But, you know, it's like the accidental release of that AOL database, that customer database. And they discovered that they could triangulate somebody based on their searches and some other data that they had put in, and then some things you could look up on AOL, and they were able to identify a woman like in Vermont who had done specific searches. And this is without knowing who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that by her IP address. So, I mean, you know, it's, yeah, it took them 8 months, but they can sure find out a lot.
I think what really be incredibly helpful in a mobile device, and I have no idea how you would ever put it together, but the ability to put your phone to sleep. So basically, because think about the battery life you would be able to save, the privacy issues that you know the tracking that would disengage for whatever period, and you just turned the phone on when you needed to make a call or you needed to use a device, some device on there.
Yeah, they already have that. Phil, it's called airplane mode,
or it's called the off button.
Airplane mode. I don't know.
Yeah, but
just
you know what? You're like my radio. You're like my dad, though. You know, here, my sisters and I are like, Dad, we can't call you if the phone's off.
I understand that. You know, there's method to that madness.
No, I know. That's
maybe your dad doesn't want to hear from you, Steve.
All right. Yeah, exactly
the same point. That have mobile phones, but because they don't want to, you know, pay for every call that comes in, they leave them switched off, and then they switch them on once a day and listen to messages and then call people back.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, that's just the style of the way.
As far as turning them on and off. Anyway.
Yeah. So I think if you're worried about privacy, don't have a smartphone. Get a burner like Julio used to do. Do you still do that, Julio?
What?
Get those prepaid phones?
Yeah, once a week I take the phone that I have, I drop it on the concrete, I stop on it.
I think you want to buy another one.
Toss it in the trash, then break the shrink wrap on the other phone that I have, my next phone in line.
Wow, boy, it's just like in the Bourne series of movies. Where
exactly,
they
he and Bin Laden, exactly. they never hang on to a phone too long.
Jason Bourne is my hero. Yeah, exactly.
You know, you look a lot like Jason Bourne. I don't know if anybody's ever said that to you.
Oh, thank really? You.
Wow.
I'm flattered.
So, well, Graham, I got to ask about this.
Jason Bourne.
Was that a segue?
Yeah, well, I had to ask about the, because you were the one who brought this up about the, when you sent out the link to us about the Facebook storefronts. So what's going on, and how might that affect our local Minnesota startup, Eighth Bridge?
Well, you know, there's been a lot coming out. I've been doing a lot of research on this topic on social commerce, and particularly what's called F-commerce, and which is
supposed to be Facebook.
Facebook,
commerce,
right. But which commerce. Which would be a subset social commerce, I guess. But and I'm going to be doing a post on this, and maybe I'll put it on Minove too. But apparently many of the large retailers that set up storefronts on Facebook have pulled out of it. It ain't working.
Really?
It ain't working for them. And, you know, when I saw this, I've been kind of wondering what's going on over at Eighth Bridge, formerly Alvenda, and Wade Gerton, the CEO, was quoted in a quite negative story on Bloomberg about how, you know, these major retailers are shutting stores down, Facebook stores down. And we're talking pennies, you know, and this may have preceded Ron Johnson there. I don't know. But I saw it pop up on a shop.org newsletter that not only Penny, but Nordstrom and GameStop or a couple others that have, that were quoted as just saying it wasn't working for them. People want to go to their actual websites. And, so I wasn't aware of the negativity around F-commerce. And then I discovered there's an analyst at Forrester who's been quite bearish on it for some time. And
if you think about it, it really only makes sense that it it not necessarily be a success, simply because Facebook is not the place where you go to buy. The place, right, that's where you go to hang with your friends. And that's what we talk a lot about. You know, we talk a lot about to people in the world of social media is, you know, this is not a sales channel. This is not a advertising channel. This is a social channel. This is where people want to hang out and talk and connect.
Yeah. That's what the article said. It'd be like hanging out with your friends at a bar and trying to sell them stuff. You know,
yeah, it's like going to the Caribbean and having somebody come up and trying to pimp you on jet skis every 2 minutes.
So, right. Well, exactly. You know, the thing about 8th Bridge's site though is that the whole thing is Facebook. Couple of other things. Facebook. Right.
They hitched themselves to that wagon and. You know, and you got to wonder, did they hitch themselves to the right wagon or are they suddenly going to be starting to find other wagons? But let me just tell you in my post later, I hate to spill all the beans now because I got to write this thing. But Wade Gertin came out and did a very good defense because the reporter didn't really tell his whole story. And the Bloomberg story just kind of cut off at the end where he said, he gives F Commerce an F so far. And I thought, whoa, that's a strong statement from a company that would appear to be totally tied to it. So, but anyway, there's more to the story and I'll post it today here, maybe even before the podcast gets posted.
Proving once again, choose your words wisely when you're talking with the press. So, I mean, that's a quote that could easily damn you right there. So.
Well, let me just tell you, they have had a wild, wild day and a half, Alvenda or 8th Bridge has, because of this story. And it's now coming out all over, you know, being reblogged here, there, and everywhere. But I think it's a fascinating topic, social commerce. And we talked about this last week and, you know, my feelings about Pinterest and so forth, which, you know, is just a tiny nit, now in comparison to, you know, what is it? 12 million users it's grown to, Pinterest, and Facebook is 850 million, but remember it's 167 million in the US, but still, social commerce is a fascinating topic, and we aren't done seeing what's going to happen in social.
I don't know if social commerce to me, like social business, and that's a term that Andrew Eklund used this past week. We had a little mobile event at Magenic for some of their clients and things like that, and Andrew spoke up about social business and social commerce. I think those are oxymorons. I don't know social and business and social and commerce. I don't know if you can put them together. It's going to be a difficult road to hoe to try to, I don't know, make a business out of social.
Well, you know what, though? I would disagree because it's, I will tell you that my wife, who is not someone who typically really, really enjoys shopping, does so socially all the time. You know, she'll go meet a friend at the mall and they'll walk around for 4 or 5 hours and have lunch. And, you know, she'll come back with 3 or 4 pairs of shoes and, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's much, much, much more social. And the four of us on here, of course, I can't speak for you guys, but I would guess that it's unlikely that you would call me and say, hey, meet me at the mall so we can buy shoes.
Or go out and get new pajamas that we could wear during our podcast. You know, Steve, there's an idea.
I've met you at Micro Center to, you know, get a OS 10 upgrade.
That's true.
Oh, that's geeky.
Yeah, but just wait a second now. Just wait a second. You're talking about a whole different world, folks. You're talking about the real world when you're talking about social interaction, you know, face to face. I don't know if you're going to say, hey, let's gather around the computer and do some shopping via Facebook.
I don't think if you really read the social commerce discussions, you know, by some of the thought leaders, and I've only read maybe a dozen of them or so, but the whole point of social commerce is making decisions before you go shopping, connecting up with people that you know, and then actually while you're shopping, pulling out your smartphone and you know, maybe connecting up with people who happen to be online and asking them stuff. Hey, what do you think about such and such? You know, and getting their feedback. And so it's sort of the being able to be connected while you're your shopping is just part of social commerce. Part of it's the research and getting advice in advance. Yeah. That kind of thing.
Yeah. And start reading up on Pinterest and see what the numbers are showing on that. It's pretty freaking awesome what we're seeing already.
Yeah.
As far as engagement and the, you know, how it's spiking sales and driving traffic like mad. And so, you know, I repeat what I said in earlier podcasts that I think that is a phenomenon in social commerce more than anything else, probably.
Well, that could be a good segue into a discussion about the next version of OS X, no longer Mac OS X.
Wait a minute. How do we segue from Pinterest into Mac OS X? Now, come on. You know I'm a big fan of your segues, but that one is a hard left turn.
Hang on, Phil. Make the cognitive leap with me, buddy.
I'm working.
So the connection or the segue is that social commerce is computer, it's mobile, it's the whole connection thing. And when you really look at Mountain Lion, it's becoming more iOS. And, you know, OS X and iOS are going to merge, as we've been talking about for some time. But with notification, with iMessage built in and all that sort of thing. Julio, are you seeing that, that whole connection with iCloud and almost making the how you get online and how you get connected sort of meaningless? If it's an iPad, an iPhone, or a Mac, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I find that trend interesting because that has been my MO for years. I've gotten to the point where I can, all my information is in the cloud, so I can get on any device anywhere and be productive. And Apple is sort of putting its own imprint on that. It's doing it in sort of its own way. When you, for instance, when you are setting up a Mountain Lion Mac for the first time, you're prompted to log into your iCloud account. And if you don't have an iCloud account, you're prompted to create one. And that sets up a situation where all your information, your mail and so forth, is being synced to the cloud and then becomes available on your other Apple devices. Apple sort of jump-started this when it announced and released iCloud. And now it's sort of taking that to the next level because now the Mac is sort of an equal partner in this. If you create a Pages document, if you do something in iWork on the Mac, it syncs to iCloud automatically and becomes viewable on your iPad. That wasn't possible before. With Mountain Lion, it will be possible. And that's exciting because it reduces a lot of friction. It eliminates a lot of hassle because things start to happen that you don't have to think about anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes your life so much easier.
I want it.
Yeah.
But I can't get it till late summer, right?
It creates, summer, but it creates a dilemma for me because Apple, until now, had been so incompetent about all of this that I had defaulted over to the Googleverse. And I'm very, very committed to the Google interpretation of the cloud. And now Apple is sort of coming on the scene with this stuff, which is very compelling, and it sort of creates conflict for me because I'm starting to feel sort of a mental tug of war about which way to go.
Boy, I'm exactly the same way.
So Julio, you've seen Mountain Lion, or at least the preview that's out now. Have they made any changes with iTunes so that it's, you know, iTunes in the cloud sort of thing, or does everything have to be downloaded from iTunes?
Well, I don't think anything in iTunes has changed. There may be changes down the road. As I understand it, the developer version of Mountain Lion is obviously just a dev version and it's incomplete. And there may be, you know, huge unannounced changes yet to come. But I think iTunes right now in Mountain Lion works exactly the same way it did in Lion, but that's not a bad thing. I've been playing with the music in the cloud feature. I've got my entire music collection up there now. I can get on any Apple device. You know, if I set up a new Mac, just fire up iTunes and all my music is bam right there. I can download any, I can stream or download any song that I want. very, very, very compelling situation for me. But to your point, I don't think anything specifically related to iTunes has changed.
Right, because I know that, you know, both in Amazon and Google, it's more of a streaming centric view of the cloud as it relates to music than Apple, which seems to be more of a download local sort of paradigm.
That's exactly right. When you whip out your iPhone or, you know, fire up your Mac, all your music is visible there. If you click on a song, and then, you know, then you pull it down and play it. Correct.
So any other features? Let's talk about iMessages, I guess, because that's one of the things that I downloaded from the Apple website yesterday and fired it up. Do you think that this sort of merging of all the messaging platforms is a good idea?
It sort of gets back to being able to do everything everywhere. What I liked about Messages and the iMessage service on mobile devices was the fact that it sort of bypassed the wireless carriers. The wireless carriers are really stiffing you for texting, and I've never texted with my carrier AT&T because I use Google Voice for that. And now Apple is with iMessage is providing an alternative to that on mobile devices. And now you'll be able to do that on the Mac. In fact, I did a post for my tech blog a few days ago about exactly that, about how there are a growing number of options for texting that sort of bypass the carriers. If you're subscribed to Comcast home phone service, you can text, you know, via your home phone number now. And the fact that Apple has brought a version of the Messages app to the desktop sort of fills in the blanks here, provides an interesting alternative to Google Voice, and allows you to do unlimited text-like communication with all your friends. The one hang up there is you have to be doing that. You have to be talking to somebody else that is also using Messages. Otherwise, it's not an option. So that's a limitation. That's one problem with this whole Apple situation. It's very Mac and iOS centric. If you're outside that universe, you're persona non grata, essentially. You can't play. You have to be within the sandbox, within this playground.
Well, you know, I just tried using iMessage, and it allowed me to choose Tim Elliott's phone and Graham and Phil's Gmail accounts, so Google Talk, and then Julio, I couldn't get connected to you, but it didn't send the message. Was unable to send the message.
His phone is in airport mode or airplane mode.
Right. but it's interesting because, you know, I look at this and say, oh, okay, there's a limitation here somewhere. Is it with connecting to Google Talk, or is it going directly to the phone, or, you know, what's the issue here?
Well, as I understand it, if you're using Messages on your Mac right now, you're either doing that via one of the instant messaging services like AIM or Yahoo or whatever, you're doing it, and now you're doing it via the text messaging like iMessage service. So you're doing one of those. So if you want to say, okay, I would like, you know, as if you were on your phone, as I understand it, I want to text such and such, but that person's using an Android phone. As I understand it, that's not possible. You won't be able to do that because that person isn't another iMessage user. So Apple wants to make it, you know, brain dead simple and convenient for you to communicate with all your friends. But the assumption, you know, the Cupertino assumption here is, oh, but you need to be using one of our products. If you're not using one of our products, you can't play.
Then why wouldn't they spell that out? Because I can see in iMessages here now that I can send a text to anybody and it seems to go out, but I guess it's not actually being delivered if they're not.
It is spelled. I've seen it, you know, spelled out. I don't remember the exact wording, but it says, you know, it spells out. You can communicate with anyone else using iPad, iPhone, iPod Touch, Mac. And they're very specific about.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not in the interface itself. It's not clear.
Yeah, if I'm missing something, correct me. But as I understand it, you have to be with an it's the same thing with Pages. Like, for instance, if I'm working on a Pages document on my Mac, and then I want to pick up where I left off on my iPhone or my iPad at the coffee shop, fantastic. You know, it all syncs right up to the cloud. It's miraculous and really convenient. But what if I'm at my a friend's house and I want to like fire up their Windows computer to show them what I was working on? That's more difficult.
Yeah,
that's a hassle.
But see, the challenge that I have is this is great for us, and it's great for us that listen to tech podcasts and so forth. But I think about my sister Jean, who, you know, God love her. She you know, got a 4.0 and graduated from St. Thomas with honor, University of St. Thomas with honors, and very, very bright woman, and is in a tech field, but is not, you know, all up on all these nuances. And if I gave her this new iMessage client for the Mac, and she saw that, oh, cool, I can send an iMessage to my brother Steve at his gmail.com account, because that's an available option, and then it doesn't get delivered. Because I've done that to myself. I've tested it by sending it to myself. And because it's an available option, I have an assumption that it's actually going to be delivered. And then when it says delivered, and I know it's beta and all that kind of stuff, but I do have the same issues even using iMessage on my phone. In fact, I turned it off on my my iPhone, because I would do a text message and send it to my son, for example, and then maybe 6 minutes later, I'd hear the whoop, the little whoosh sound of the message going. And it's like, oh, geez, that thing just went. You know, so there's things like that that there's just too much going on right now, and people's expectations have to be met, and met easily and met head on. So I'm hoping that this all gets addressed in Mountain Lion before they ship it.
And again, Apple, you know, Apple is still struggling a little bit with this. I think the reason I'm so googly with the cloud, I love my Apple hardware, but the reason I love Google in the cloud so much is because you never have to worry about not having access to your information regardless of what device you're on.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. I got my kid hooked on Google Docs, and he doesn't even think about it anymore. He just writes his papers in Google Docs, and he never ever ever worries about not having access to his information regardless of where he is. Like, for instance, we bought the Sony TV with Google TV in it, and he did something that had not even freaking occurred to me. He said, oh, there's a browser on there, so if I like go to Google Docs on this thing and I have this wireless keyboard, I plug the USB dongle into the TV and that should work, right? And so he did that, and
it worked.
And within 5 minutes, he was sitting on the couch, writing his paper on the TV.
Oh, how funny is that? Of course, that would be bad in my house because my wife was an English major.
Yeah,
and correcting him the whole time.
And the other thing, put that combo over there. And then my kid said, okay, for my next trick, he was writing his paper on a MacBook Air. But he had the Google document up on the TV, and he was like, look, Dad, I'm writing my paper and watch it update on the TV. And it was so funny.
Would you adopt me, Julio? You got some cool stuff at your house.
But the problem with the Google stuff, the Google approach breaks down completely if you're trying to do Google Docs on an iPad. That sucks. Google Docs does not work on the iPad at all.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, since you brought up the Google TV, Julio, what do you make of all these rumors that Apple TV is being sold out at retail? And do you think that they're going to actually be announcing a television?
I struggle with that because I bought this fancy Google TV, and aside from the few parlor tricks that my kid is doing, it's become apparent to me that it's nice. It's kind of cool to have these features built into the TV, but we've, you know, frankly, very rarely use them. And there, so there's a missing, there's something missing in the experience that Apple either has figured out. You know, there's a, there's that famous quote in the Steve Jobs biography where he tells his biographer that, you know, he figured it out. He figured something out. I don't know what he figured out.
He but cracked after, it. Cracked what he, that's what he said. Yeah.
Yeah. There's something. There's a piece missing that Google has not figured out that Apple either has figured out and is about to implement, or Apple has come to the realization. You know, Apple will very often not follow in the footsteps of other tech makers because for them it makes absolutely no sense. Like having a touchscreen laptop makes no sense. Having a touchscreen desktop computer, like I'm looking at one in my office here right now. There's a Sony, this iMac like Sony computer for the desktop. Beautiful machine. I love it. I love working on it. I never use the touch part of it though. That makes no sense. So Apple says, you know, we don't care if everybody else is doing this. For us, it makes absolutely no sense. For the consumer, it makes no sense. So we're not going to do it. So Apple may well have come to the conclusion that having a TV with Google TV type stuff built into it makes no sense. And I'm starting to agree with that because I never use that stuff. I just watch TV. So either Apple has cracked the code and is about to show us how it's cracked the code, or it's come to the conclusion that this makes no sense. I don't know which one it is, but if it releases a TV, it better have something really amazing that we've never seen before, or it's going to make no sense, just like the Google TV.
Well, I will tell you that that the best investment that I ever made was to buy a couple of those little Apple TV boxes connected to the HETVs, because we can hook up our, you know, send stuff through iPhone through the AirPlay and all that. And that was one of the hot buttons that I had with the Mountain Lion reviews that I've read thus far, is AirPlay mirroring from your computer to the device.
Yeah, one of the marketing bigwigs here at the paper came up to me and he said you can stick an Apple TV in your briefcase and go and give a presentation somewhere and hook up the Apple TV to your TV and then use your iPad for a presentation, right? And he was really excited about that. I said, yeah, but unfortunately you can't do that with a Mac. I know you're a Mac user, you can't do that with a Mac, and now you can. And this is sort of blown the lid off the Apple TV as a business device. I mean, I don't think anybody conceived that the Apple TV would be a business device, but I think it's going to be increasingly common for business types to have an Apple TV in their briefcases at all times.
Well, with one exception, and the exception is that if I had one in my briefcase and I brought it to Corporation A and plugged it in, I'd have to get on their network. So I'd have to configure it to get on their network. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the Mac would have to then also be on the network to connect to the Apple TV. And this is one of the issues that I had when we did that social media breakfast where they had the Jumbotron and I was presenting to the Jumbotron outside, is I wanted to use my iPhone as the remote to drive my keynote presentation. And both the devices had to be on the network. I couldn't set up the Mac as its own little Wi-Fi network and send out a signal and so on. And that's why people have talked with great excitement about Bluetooth 4 that's coming and that is expected to be in the iPad 3 and the iPhone 5 and the next versions of the various MacBooks. Because Bluetooth 4 not only has greater range, but it has all kinds of new capabilities. And I would bet that these devices will be self-contained from a connectivity standpoint. And what I mean by that is then you will be able to throw the Apple TV in your briefcase, plug it in, and get connected because it's your device. All you need is an HDMI cable to plug into the back of a TV. And now you're dancing. Because otherwise, this stuff is just, it's all terrific until you have to set it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only challenge that I see with a lot of it, is it's really, really cool. But then if I can't use it without having to, you know, get my my undergrad in computer science, then that's a problem.
With Keynote Remote, though, you can set up a direct link to the computer. You can bypass the network in your venue, though, can't you?
You can, but I haven't been successful doing it myself. And believe me, I know how to do this stuff. So I haven't been able to get it to work.
All right.
So it's a real challenge. But anyway, I just see a lot of this stuff. A lot of people are kind of freaking out about AirPlay mirroring because now you'll be able to go full screen with a video through Hulu or something or some other website and watch it on your TV. So that's got to be giving a heart attack to the networks.
Doubt it.
Yeah.
the networks are just asleep at the wheel. So I really doubt that they're plugged into all this stuff.
I know. Well, but you know what though? I mean, with Comcast is I was flipping through some channels last night and I realized there are 4 channels that I would like to get that I don't have and about 25 that I get that I could care less about. And because they do bundles, I'd have to make a big step forward to be able to get, you know, the Science Channel and a couple of others, National Geographic and so on. And that's the thing that's why people are so mad. They're just mad when they try to just say, look, all I want to do is give you money, but I want to choose the channels that I want. I don't want you to tell me which ones I can have, which ones I can't.
It's interesting that you say that, Steve, because my wife just did an interesting thing. My wife, she watches the bottom line very carefully, and the price was about to be raised on our Comcast TV service.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Hey, I don't like this." And she got on the phone with Comcast and had a long conversation with somebody about that. And I don't know if she discovered something that was available that she didn't know about, or whether, you know, she successfully consummated a negotiation. I'm not sure exactly what happened in that conversation. She figured out that we could get a full HD package. Up to that point, we were digital, but not HD. And she figured out that we could get a full HD package with about 80 or 90 HD channels, including a whole bunch of channels that we wanted, but that we didn't have before,
mm-hmm.
for less money than we were paying for non-HD service.
Interesting.
And my wife is she's an operator. She will. I'm not a very confrontational purpose. I sort of shrink from confrontation. My wife is an in-your-face kind of a person. She said, if somebody's doing something to her in whatever context that she doesn't like, she's going to get in that person's face and sort of figure out how to get some kind of concession out of that person or make that person back down. And she successfully did that with Comcast. And now we're in glorious HD, which is good timing because we have this brand new Sony TV. And we have all these channels for less money than we were paying before. So I my response to you is, you know,
call them
and see if you can work something out because, I'm over the moon. I was doing HD before using an antenna, just getting the basic channels. And that's the best kind of HD because it's uncompressed, but now we have all these, Comcast HD channels, National Geographic and so forth. And I'm thrilled.
Well, I tell you that there's, you know, you mentioned Downton Abbey, Tim.
Yeah.
Yep. So last night my wife said, you know what, let's go through the Apple TV and just buy a season pass to Downton Abbey so you can watch season 2. Cause we haven't watched any of season 2. We just got done watching season 1 on Netflix. And so we went and bought it last night and downloaded it. And I got to tell you that the quality was probably 20% better than Comcast, because I use a TiVo and I record those, and you know, of course, it had to load the shows and you know and so on, so it took a while to buffer, but it was a great experience. And so my daughter comes up, she's the one that works at the Mall of America Apple Store, and she comes up and she says, you know, you guys, why don't you just cut the cord and just buy your shows through the Apple TV? And I looked at her and I said, okay, there are 10 different shows that we record pretty regularly. And to do that, if we bought season passes to each one, it would you know, probably cost us about double what we're paying right now for Comcast TV and the TiVo subscription. And I've really been looking at that and trying to figure out how do I optimize what we have? And it's just not easy. You know, it's like your mobile phone. If you call them and you want to work through some different packages and all that, you know, if the guy on the phone had onions on his cheeseburger for lunch, the price is different. I mean, it's really, really a challenge.
Yeah.
So
you got to threaten to quit though. When you call Comcast and threaten to, you know, go to DirecTV or something, that's when they start offering all kinds of, yeah, you know, nice options to you. Is that what your wife did, Julio?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Did she do what now?
Did she threaten to quit and go to another service?
Oh hell yeah.
Yeah.
I just did that with a Sirius radio. You know, if you let your Sirius radio go from whatever deal you're on to the regular price, it's like ridiculously expensive. So I called them and I said, okay, I'd like to cancel. And they said, well, can we work this out? And
it's me.
Well, it was something like, $85 for 6 months. And I got a deal for like, I think it was 25 for 5 months, something like that. So, I mean, if you just call and threaten, you know, you'll get the better deal.
Yep.
I tried that with Mini Gasco, but it didn't work. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Look, I go ahead and cut the gas off. See what happened. You know,
we're going firewood.
Yeah.
So Julio, you were working on a story about Pinterest. Have you finished that one yet?
So I'll probably write this coming week. I'm writing a column. I'm in the position of writing a column about something, and it usually when I write a tech column for the paper, it's about something that I'm really excited about, or something I'm really pissed off about. You know, something that is really great, or something that sucks. You know, that's my usual MO. But sometimes I find myself in a position of writing about something that I know is really popular, that I know I need to write about, but I'm staring and staring and staring at this thing. And I just don't get it. It's like, I don't get it. You know, what's the big deal? And that's where I fall into the position of reaching out to like people like you. As I basically reached out to all my digital friends and said, you know, okay, I don't get this thing. Tell me why you like it or dislike it or whatever. And I got a flood of responses about
Pinterest. Really?
And so
what did you learn on that?
I'm still sifting through that, but I'm facing a huge challenge because I have all this wonderful material that I just can't possibly cram into a column.
You know what that means?
So I think I'll
Pinterest means business.
Yeah, Pinterest.
I already sent the ebook from HubSpot. It's already out there. Of that very same name. It was just released.
Yeah, I saw that. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to synthesize this into a column, and then the unfiltered responses, I'm just going to put them all online for people to read. I'll be honest with you, I still don't get Pinterest, but I've been like poking it with a stick, and maybe I'll eventually get it. The other social network that I still don't fully get is Path. Are you guys Path users?
Yes.
No, uninstalled it because they were downloading my address book.
Yeah, but they've stopped doing that now.
Yeah, well, I'm not going back. Once I get burned, I'm done.
Ooh,
that's a fit. You get one chance with me.
Oh, you scorn Tim Elliott. You suffer the wrath.
That's right.
Jeez. Okay.
Jeez. Well, both Path and Pinterest are going places. They both have plenty of money and plenty of hype and noise and buzz behind them. That is for sure. What kills me is how their logos look so much alike. You know, it's like, can't these designers come up with something new? You know, and then, but interestingly, Pinterest launched first. And then, you know, there are those that say, wait a minute, it looks just like the Philadelphia Phillies logo. You know, so it's crazy. The peas out there.
Well, here's the thing, though, about Pinterest is that, you know, I because of that article in Fast Company, which we'll put a link in the show notes to, about, you know, the popularity and all the people viewing it, and they spend, you know, over an hour and a half per day on the site and so on and so forth. I've started just to poke around. I started to look at different categories and things of that nature. And because I'm such a visual person, I'm starting to kind of, it's getting really growing on me. Oh, yeah. So, you know,
it's addictive.
Well, and I'm flipping through and I found this really cool garage, organizing system, but it's not one where you go buy the whole garage organizing system. It's how you can assemble pieces and parts from the hardware store and from IKEA and do some really awesome stuff, you know, hanging stuff from the ceiling and all sorts of things. And what grabbed me was the photo. And it was a photo of this woman standing there putting all this stuff in this organizer system. And so it's just stuff like that where you go, oh, wait a minute. I mean, is there something here that, I could see, you know, clicking on something for the garden, and instead of just having a tweet or a Facebook like or a place to comment, there'd be, links on the side to go buy it.
Yep.
That's obviously where the next step is.
It's all about commerce. But you're right. It's a dream come true for photographers and graphic designers. Did you read about the guy who's like the top male on Pinterest?
No.
He's a graphic designer who must have jumped on it a year ago. The guy has over 700,000 followers. I think his name is Mike Dew, D-E-W. And, these are the people that get it. And I know some of my local designer friends, like Michael Roventeen, are all over it too. You know, visual people love this thing. It's like a Twitter, except it's visual.
Yeah, photographer Trey Radcliffe is all over Pinterest. And he put up a post about how a lot of his photographer friends are very leery about like saving full versions of their photos in such an uncontrolled, such a difficult to control way. And he was scolding them. He was saying, Pinterest is not a danger. It's an opportunity.
Well, yep. So here's the one thing about Pinterest is the Boston Globe came out with an article because they had just absolutely jumped on Pinterest with both feet. Mm-hmm. And I'll put a link in the show notes to the article. And then they dug into the terms of service. And it turns out that the terms of service said that Pinterest can resell any photographs that you put up on Pinterest. And they went, oh, wait a minute. Because they're, of course, buying photos through their subscription to Reuters and Associated Press and Getty Images and all of that. And so if the conduit was them posting it and then it got resold, then they'd be on the hook for the copyright infringement. So there are lots of little gotchas like that that people have to really understand if they're going to be have a business relationship with Pinterest, get their small business online and so forth. Just read the terms of service, folks.
Yep. And there's there's legal considerations that are going to come into play. I'll put a link in the show notes about that topic, about copyright infringement and legal cases that maybe provide some precedent, but it's still a question out there. But I've also seen advice for photographers to watermark your photos. But each pin does link to a site, so it's going to drive traffic to the photographer's site, and how can they not like that, but they get real sensitive about people using their photography, certainly for commercial purposes, but as well they should. Yeah. but if it's driving traffic to their site, again, it all seems to be about commerce to me here.
Well, so one of the things that I thought was interesting was an article, and I'll try to find it. I'm not sure I can, but it was about the what ifs for Pinterest. So imagine now that you go in and you start to bookmark different posts in different product categories, and then you go into the Mall of America and you open up your Pinterest app, and the Pinterest app then says, hey, all of these things that you thought were cool, here's where they're available for sale in the mall. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, imagine that in terms of the connection to social commerce.
Yep. Yeah, when you're and you alluded to this before, is sort of melding the online and the bricks and mortar.
Yeah. Well, just imagine, know, just imagine how easy, Phil, it would be for you to find all those ladies' undergarments.
That's what I've been looking for, baby.
What a
digital
kidder.
Top drawer.
There you go. There you go. The creation aspect of, I'm trying to segue. Sorry.
You're trying to segue. He's working on a segue, folks.
You don't have to talk about that. I just stuck that in because I thought you'd like it, Steve.
Well, and I do like it. And that's why I want to say something about it. What Tim did is he stuck in the show notes here a free interactive ebook publishing platform from Inkling, not Apple. And I mean, I got to tell you that there are
wait a minute. Why should we stop talking about Apple now?
Well, you gotta present both sides of the argument. We talked about iBook Author before,
right? Well, I got to tell you that one of the most interesting ones, and I've signed up for it and haven't heard anything back from them yet, is one that was profiled on TechCrunch a while ago called Pressly. And the reason that Pressly is so attractive is, unlike Adobe, with you've got to buy server time, and then you've got to buy based on how many users and how much storage you want and all that. And you'll spend, even as a small publisher, you can't get out of there for 12 or 15 grand a year. The cool thing about Pressly is that it feels like a Flipboard, but all the content is pushed by WordPress or Drupal or some other RSS feed capability. And you can also put a password in your RSS feed and then only have the app be able to decode that, suck the feed in so you can keep it private. And it's a really, really interesting looking app.
What does it cost?
I don't know yet because they haven't gotten back to me. It's an email invite only. Mm. You can see a demo at read.thestar.com. And unlike OnSwipe, which they did a deal with WordPress.com, and you could implement that and have it be an iPad like viewing experience, it didn't work very well. A lot of times it cut off content and so forth. I really had issues with it. This one really looks like it's tight and really complete. So stay tuned for that.
It's cool.
Yeah. So there's a lot of tools coming out. Pretty soon Julio will be writing his next book with one of them, right?
Actually playing around with iBooks Author. I'm not going to be publishing anything dramatic, but I'm using some Pioneer Press content and sort of repackaging it in iBooks form just as a kind of a proof of concept, just to teach myself how to do it. It's very interesting.
Are you because I've talked to a couple of people who have said that they want to test the waters with iBooks Author, mm-hmm. and give away a free book. Have you considered doing anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I just need a good idea. I haven't really come up with an idea. With iBooks Author, you want it to be highly visual, highly interactive.
Yep.
If it's just text, you know, what's the point? One very interesting case in point is my good friend Patrick Roan, a local Mac guy. He's his Minimal Mac blog is very popular. He's self-published several books. Actually, he just had one come out a while back. Another one is coming out. He's got another one in the works. Those are all text. And I asked him, you know, have you considered using iBooks Author? And he said, absolutely, but just doesn't make sense for the projects that I have in the pipeline now. But he's from the New Orleans area, and he's got a lot of interesting connections in his family. Like he has about 1.5 degrees of separation from Martin Luther King.
Oh.
There's a lot of rich history in his family that he's collected in the form of old movies and audio and pictures. And he's toying with the idea of doing something about his very, very interesting and rich family history in iBooks Author form, which would make absolute perfect sense. And so I'm hoping he'll get that off the ground eventually.
Yep.
Yeah.
Huh. Great. So should we just, let's just segue into the upcoming events. You guys are being kind of quiet.
Well, we didn't want to get, you know, we didn't want to interrupt you and Julio doing the whole TV thing and the whole, you guys were
very talking very visual stuff today. So we just kind of sat back in awe.
I did want to, I was going to chime in with one segue on that whole TV thing.
Sorry, it's too late.
Yeah. No, very quickly. I made an interesting discovery. We were talking about Apple TV. We were talking about Google TV. And I made a very interesting discovery. Apple has added a sort of a secret sauce to the Netflix experience. Because I discovered almost by accident that if you do Netflix, like for instance, on my brand new Sony Google TV, if you fire up the Netflix app that is built into that, the video looks terrible. But if you fire up the exact same show, like an episode of 24, using the Apple TV on the Sony Google TV, it looks amazing. If you do Netflix on a iPad, it looks great compared to like doing Netflix on an Android tablet. Apple, I don't know what Apple has done, but Apple has sort of optimize the Netflix experience to the point where doing non-Apple Netflix has become intolerable for me. It's a very interesting discovery.
I've noticed the same thing with TiVo and Roku.
I've noticed it on Roku.
So it has to do with the upconverting, software that they're using. Because I noticed that if you stream via Netflix on the TiVo, which is a horrible interface, but it actually looks pretty good. But on Roku, even though the interface is a lot better, it doesn't. The picture is not quite as good, and I think it has to do with how they're up converting the signal.
Yeah, I have a Roku box and an Apple TV box sitting right next to each other in my entertainment center, all hooked into the exact same TV. And the difference, the Netflix on one box versus the other box, the difference is just stark. I'm just amazed.
Yeah,
I'm gonna run out and buy an Apple TV then.
You should.
Well, they're in short supply.
Are they really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. You should wait until they introduce whatever's next.
Yeah, I suppose an updated version of it at least. Huh?
Unless you got a spare $100.
Yeah, that's true.
Or buy it at Best Buy and then return it when the other one comes out. No, that's a good idea. Oh my God!
Hey, you're the Mr. Return. You know, the Kindle Fire return.
Yeah, that's the only thing I've done really recently.
Well, wait a minute, you're that Jawbone thing too. Whatever it was called.
Oh no, I didn't have to return that. They let you keep it, but they send you a refund, and then they let. They let you keep it.
So, okay, yeah, so let me get this straight.
It's like a dream come true.
So you buy it?
I took the refund, yeah, but you can buy it.
You buy it and then they send you your money back, but you don't have to send it back.
No, no. They said that they'll send you a new one if you want. So they were giving the refund back and replacing the unit both. That's how they bent over backwards to be nice to their customers. But they haven't come out with a new version yet. And Nike's kind of stolen that thunder with their new device. And Fitbit is a pretty damn good device too. So who knows what'll happen with the Jawbone up. But I got my money.
That's all that matters.
Yep.
Okay,
money,
boys.
Money, money, money.
Coming up in the near future, we got WordPress MSP. It looks like there's a lot of people jumping in, Tim, to present.
Yeah, it looks like an interesting event. So, I think I'm going to try to make it down there.
Well, anyone who's listening, if you have any interest in WordPress whatsoever, this is a group you want to be connected with.
You know the Pioneer Press's blog platform went WordPress recently, right?
Really? Are you doing VIP hosting? Do you know how it's hosted?
I'm not in charge of that, so I'm not sure, but moving from movable type to WordPress was like arriving in the promised land.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really? Oh, God. Yeah.
No kidding.
I love it.
I don't know if you guys want to go through this whole list again, because we've gone through this list now a couple of times because things are.
I think we should just highlight Mobile March. What do you think? I think
that's what we should really highlight. Says Phil.
Yeah, right. Do you have a discount code for us, Phil? For listeners? No discount code?
Not yet. No, sorry.
Do they get any benefit for listening? Like, do they get more donuts or what?
Whatever. Sure. Help yourself.
More donuts.
More donuts. More donuts.
For Minivate Gang listeners.
I like that. All right.
You know, how about donut holes? I haven't really thought about that.
I gotta talk to the co-presenters here or co-producers and see if, you know, maybe we should do something like that. That'd be fun. So for friends of Steve Borsch, instead of $85, it's $108. How about that?
Works for me.
And free donuts.
All right.
But we do have a keynoter that we're going to be announcing on Monday. So we're very excited about that. I know who it is, but I'm a little hesitant to say because I'm not 100% sure that we have it all locked up. This is the issue they have when you're working with a committee. It's that you got to make sure all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed.
So. Is it an in-towner or an out-of-towner?
No, this is an out-of-towner.
Okay. And,
well, let's just say we are on the verge of securing a CIO with a company in Chicago. In fact, I mentioned it a little bit earlier. We had a little gathering focusing on mobile for clients and invitees at the Magenic with Magenic, and we brought together a bunch of different thought leaders on mobile, including some of the people that have presented or will present at Mobile March. And one of the people that we brought in was a guy by the name of Guy Thier. He is the CIO at Bally Fitness and has done an incredible job of integrating mobile into the Bally Fitness ecosystem. And you talk to this CIO and you would swear to God he was a CEO or a CMO. He's really got a great understanding. So we're looking to bring him in as a keynoter. We really look forward to that. And that will make for a very, very good presentation. I know that you'll all enjoy that. Except for you, Graham, you're not going to be here.
Except me, I've got to go to Phoenix or to Tucson. So, but I'll hear all about it.
Yep. So that's
I'll watch the hashtag, 16, which will be so, what? Mobile March? Just Mobile March?
It's probably just be MMTC.
MMTC.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go. Or shorter, MMTC. Shorter's good.
Yeah, shorter's good. So.
Yep. And Julio, is there anything that is hot on your horizon in terms of technology you're going to look at or anything like that?
Yeah, what's your favorite gadget right now, Julio?
Julio. Oh.
New headset, obviously.
Sorry, I lost you guys there.
Just in terms of what technology, what's hot? What are you looking at right now?
Pinterest. I'll look for my Pinterest coverage very soon. I'm going to be very exhaustive in my coverage, if a bit skeptical.
Okay.
So, well, what about gadgets? You got any gadgets that are sitting on your desk or in that are showing up via UPS that you've been playing with that you really like?
I'm a big iPhone guy, but
no.
But I've become increasingly impressed with Android. The latest Android devices from Verizon, the Droid Razor Max. With its very good battery life and the Droid 4, they really nailed the slide out physical keyboard on that one. So I'm really coming around to Android more and more. And don't faint, but I also like Windows Phone 7.
Mm-hmm.
This is shaping up to be a very interesting three-way race because the three major mobile phone platforms all have compelling things to bring to the table. They're all very distinct. They all have their own personalities and they're all, you know, shaping up very, very nicely. And so the whole mobile phone scene is one I'm watching with great interest because it's very, the things that are coming on the scene are very exciting.
You know, and you notice in there is absolutely no mention of BlackBerry in anything that he said there. Those poor bastards.
I'm officially writing it off.
Well, I want to tell you that I'm going to put in the show notes a link to that Care 11 video where you were on. I forget the name of the show now with you were on with Tim McNiff, and you showed this little model remote control helicopter being controlled with your iPhone.
Oh, that was so much fun.
That was awesome. You guys have to watch this.
I was so, when I was planning what gadgets to show in that segment, I was like, wouldn't it be cool if I launched a remote control helicopter from the table right on the set? Wouldn't that be awesome? Yeah. And what actually happened, it totally exceeded my expectations. It was great.
So big things have happened on the podcast today. It seems that with the death of Steve Jobs, Graham Thickens and Julio Ojeda Zapata are starting to bail on the Apple. There's cracks in the Apple armor with these guys.
Hey, we haven't even mentioned
interface, baby.
We haven't even mentioned the iPad 3. That's going to be announced on what, March 7th? And it looks now it's going to have that Retina display. So I'm all over that as soon as I can order it.
What? There's going to be a new iPad?
The heck you say.
Doggone right.
It's like next you're going to tell me there's going to be a new iPhone.
Yeah. And new MacBooks. I mean, come on.
And new Macs. Come on. What are you talking? It's crazy talk is what it is.
But that Retina display is going to be nice on the iPad.
Yeah,
that display has huge implications for iBooks Author, because right now people that are trying to create iBooks Author generate content for the iPad are feeling the experience to be very constraining because of the pixel requirements. And that Retina display is going to have huge implications for ebook publishing.
Yep.
Yeah. No kidding.
So, Julio, do you think that they're going to do a different size than the current size? That was one of the rumors that was out this week.
It's hard to say. I'm gonna go out on a limb and make a prediction, and then look foolish later. But here's my prediction: they're going to keep the current iPad as a bargain device, an entry level device. They're obviously going to introduce a new full size iPad with the Retina display, and I'm fairly certain that they're going to release a smaller device. I don't know if they're going to do that for this round, but I definitely think that's coming. They can't ignore the Kindle Fire.
Well, would it be? It would be probably more like a larger iPod Touch than a smaller iPad, right?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be more tablet-y in the interface than phone-like, because I don't think a phone interface works very well beyond the 5-inch measurement. So they're going to figure out how to make that tablet-y. And I think, you know, when Steve Jobs was pouring water on the whole, you know, people don't want a smaller tablet. It was a standard, you know, lying through his teeth until he releases one of his own.
It was a stall tactic. Yeah. Exactly. I love the new category term, phablet, phablet.
Man. I don't see any point in it.
I'd like a 5-inch iPod Touch though. I think that would be really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a larger, you know, an iPhone that is slightly, that's physically larger, that's inevitable as well.
Yeah. All right, let's leave it at that, gentlemen. We should fly.
Yes, we should.
So thank you for listening, everyone. And thanks, gentlemen, for being on. Appreciate it, Julio. It's been great.
I love it.
All right.
We'll see you next week on the Minute Maid Gang podcast.
See you guys.
Take care.
Adios.
Have a good one.